Because it's cool, because it's like, okay, well, you know, say you're 14, 15, and you grew up watching the whole original crew. It's like, oh, wow, they're coming back. Wait, they're older. They're more awesome. Yes.
They're a little wider.
Superhero time.
This is superhero time for, what day is it? It's Tuesday, April the 13th, 2010. Hey Mickey is not with us this week because he sucks. But I do have Paladin and Fort Max. You guys are troopers.
Yay.
We are troopers?
I wasn't going to say it, Fort Max.
But
now,
I
if you
was.
Like, if you like, you could be riders, like Saban's Masked Rider.
We already got our Saban's Masked Rider reference in.
Well, yes, but when I put the show together, this is going to be up first.
No, it isn't, because we're live.
First I've heard of it. And if we are out live right now, I'm very sorry to anybody who's actually listening to it. Okay, so Paladin, you want to go ahead and kick into the news?
All right. In a bit of unusually perfect timing today, we got our first scans of Gosei Grand, the mecha that will belong to Gosei Knight in Gosager.
Is it a piano?
Not yet, but...
I mean, with a name like Gosei Grand, I would think that would go with, like, the Gosei Mike into a whole Gosei musical arrangement.
Yeah, because the world just doesn't have enough horror right now. Anyway,
can play the Gosei piano.
Anyway, moving on to stuff that matters. Gosei Grand is a three-piece combination, kind of in the same vein as the Predazord from Wild Force.
Or any other set of three Zord Megazords.
More like the Paleomax in any anything, based on the way it combines.
Or the Jungle Pride Megazord.
Well, I'm thinking Predazord because that's three pieces that belongs to one ranger.
What was it? What was the Jungle Fire? No. What was the upgrade Megazord in Jungle Fury? I can't think of its name.
Jungle Master?
Okay. So what were you saying?
It's a...
I'm on Benadryl. My brain is half fried at this point.
Okay, business as usual.
Yeah.
Let's see. It's a... Like I said, the three pieces are three different lions. There's the Black Lion, which is kind of like the lion from... The Thunder Zords, kind of echoing the comparison we had with Gosei Dragon. And
I thought you were going to compare it to Voltron's Black Lion.
Same here.
It's kind of Voltron-esque, now that you mention it.
When you say Black Lion, anybody's going to think of Voltron.
I know.
Or a Lion Combiner, anybody's going to think of Voltron, too.
Yeah. And there's the Blue Sea Lion, which... Okay, that's kind of weird. And red, the third Zord is a red one, which is apparently a sky lion. And I don't know how that works, really.
Couldn't they have used, like, a lion fish?
Or, I don't think so, because they're trying to split the Zords between all three of the tribes. Black is Landic, blue is Seic, red is Skyic here.
It was just supposed to be a joke.
Well, it failed.
Yeah, tell me something I don't know. Anyway, go on.
And there's a smaller... There's a smaller picture here showing the combination, which will be known as Grand Gosei Great.
Kind of it a piano?
You could have a piano finisher, I'm not sure. Hmm. It's pretty awesome, I'd have to say.
Is it?
I definitely like this new look.
Right now, I think the picture is a little too small to get much out of it either way. But it looked like, wasn't there a new form for Data Typer, too, with this?
No, it doesn't seem to be in there.
Aww.
It does, however, confirm that Gosei Knight transforms into the header for the Black Lion.
Huh.
which will be interesting to see once it finally comes about.
Now, do we know if that's going to be executed on the toy?
We would assume so, yes.
So we're going to have a little Ghostly Knight Headmaster?
Possibly.
Interesting.
Yeah. Ghostly Grand will
that,
be...
Being that Bandai that's going to make it, it'll probably turn out to be crap, but...
Yeah, of course. We won't see the release of the actual toy until July, and it'll probably appear in the show shortly before that, I would guess.
Well, still, that's practically right around the corner.
Yeah, and the price
at
on
the
this
least,
is...
At the least, we'll get bigger catalog scans before then.
Yes. And the price on Gosei Grand here is, I believe, 6,800 yen.
That's about right for a Megazord.
Yeah, it's a little bit less than Gosei Grand, which probably means it's smaller by comparison.
Well, plus, if it only has three pieces, it can be a little cheaper, too.
Right.
Or four, if you count Gosei Knight Headmaster.
Yeah.
So there were some other mecha that turned up, too, weren't there?
The second scan is for the movie exclusive for Ghost Sager. We don't know much about the actual movie yet. I'm sure it'll come in due time. But this...
I'm sure it'll be in 3D also.
Yeah, of course. This new one is called Gosei Wonder. It's
Does it turn into a loaf of bread?
It's...
Or does it come with a loaf of bread? Does it have a loaf of bread header?
I do not think so. If it came with a loaf of bread, I'd be more likely to buy it, I admit.
Yeah, but, I mean, you've had candy toys before, right? If the loaf of bread was on par with the candy in a candy toy, I don't think you'd be getting any advantage there.
Actually, I've never bought the candy toys.
I understand they're horrible little things, the candies.
I would guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like
at
chomping
least
down
gum
a
is,
chunk
least,
of soap.
I know the Transformers ones come with terrible gum.
Well, I'm familiar with there being like terrible little lemon candies and stuff like that. But mostly the pattern is just that it's terrible.
Yeah.
Okay, so Gosei Wonder.
It's the main body is a blue repaint of the Gosei Dragon with a different header. And it also comes with four new headers that would replace the existing heads from the traditional Gosei machines.
Yeah, I think this is actually a pretty novel way to do a movie-exclusive mecha.
Yeah. It's better than a straight-up repaint like with Engine Dai Shogun back in Goanger.
Actually, the Engine Shogun...
That
was
a retool, at least.
Yeah.
A minor one, not quite this extensive, I think.
Came with new glasses, came with a new sword and some glasses for the speeder recolor. They seem to like putting glasses on that.
Yeah.
Actually, didn't the recolored Buson get a bigger mustache, too?
They called it a detachable mustache.
There you go. Yeah, so, I mean, it wasn't just a straight-up recolor.
No, it was a Megazord with a Groucho disguise.
I'd buy that. I didn't, but I would.
Well, too late now, probably.
I would buy that if presented with the opportunity to locally. Bandai.
It got canceled.
Our Bandai.
Yeah. It'll show up in England.
It already has. The little Microzord one.
But not the full-sized one that has detachable mustaches.
I don't even really care about the full-sized ones. Okay, back on subject here.
And last but not quite least, we've found out that the Ghost Sager team will be getting a team power-up, somewhat like SWAT mode and Legend mode from Decaranger and Maji Ranger, respectively.
Right.
And their power-up changer appears to be a gumball machine.
With a sword.
Yes.
No, it's one of those glass watering globes that you see on the TV commercials and in Walgreens.
So they get their power from Billy Mays?
If only. But no, Billy Mays, much as Zordon, has passed into the annals of history.
They're angels. They can go to heaven and get power.
Oh. Well, in that case... So,
Billy Mays it is.
So would Master Head then be wearing a blue shirt?
Yes.
This is what we come to when Mickey's not here with us. How terrible.
Yeah.
Okay, so the power up thing is called the Gosei Ten Sword, apparently. Is that right?
Yep.
Gosei Ten Sword.
Like the other stuff, it'll probably be out in June or July.
That would seem to make sense, yeah. So do we have anything else for that? Anything else with the Ghost Ager stuff this week?
No, but I'm definitely liking the looks of most of this new stuff.
Well, like I said before, I'm waiting for a bigger scan. Just so I can get some details out of it. It's hard for me to judge based on the quality of scan we have right now.
Especially for the Gosei Ten Sword, because it looks like there is a lot of detail lost just for how small and low quality the scan is.
Yeah, I gotta admit that one scan of the Ten Sword doesn't exactly inspire confidence just yet.
It'll get better.
But with a thing like that, what really sells it is seeing it in action.
Yeah, I imagine so. Okay, so what else do we have this week?
Let's see. There's some underlying rumors about what the main plot device might be for Regulus, if it's true.
Ah, Masked Rider Regulus. Can I love you even though you're not double? Probably not. Okay, so what do we have there?
Well, apparently what Regulus and the other riders will use for powers are these things called medals instead of, like, cards or dopant memories.
Mm-hmm. Tell us more.
That's about all there is at the moment, I think.
Oh. Well, I'm sure that'll come together as we get closer to the time when Regulus would debut.
Right. It does make sense that they're still staying away from the cards, though, because true to form, Regulus would probably come in just as Ghost Sager was still ending and they'd still be using cards. They'd want to be able to distinguish them.
Well, assuming that Double gets a full run, Regulus should start around the fall. So it won't only be about halfway through Ghost Sager.
Right. Which further proves my point. They'd still want to not have cards to distinguish it from Ghost Sager.
Right, right. Just so we don't get a misconception on how this is going to time out.
Yeah.
Okay. There's been just, you know, the little tiny burst of news this week, but not really anything much beyond that. So, Fort Max, why don't you tell us about this week's part two of Green with Evil?
I have a new favorite sound effect.
Betrayed!
Betrayed!
Yeah, it seems to me that they're getting with how silly this whole thing is, and they're just going to go and play it up as much as they can now.
Well, that's what it's been from day one.
It's getting worse, though.
Better.
Worse.
It's getting more extreme. How about that?
I'm just waiting for the Cybernet Space Cube.
Me too. But yeah, you know, something's always bugged me about Green with Evil Part 2. And it has nothing to do with the remastered reworking of it. If you remember when Zordon first gave the Rangers their powers, one of the conditions he set down was to never escalate a battle unless Rita forces you to. Which is generally taken to mean don't call the Zords and step on the monster first. But in this case, when faced with Green Ranger, and they don't have Jason around to help them, the first thing they do, hey, let's call the Megazord out and stomp on him.
And plus, considering I wouldn't consider calling the Megazord escalating the battle since he already took it down once.
Well, he kicked them out of it once.
It's a debatable point, I think.
I suppose so. Now, of course,
and,
the real
and
reason
plus,
for...
the Megazord just stood there and blocked his attack and it just bounced off back at him.
Is this the only time in the series that the Megazord actually uses that damn shield?
No, in the
second part of the first season with the see, I told you my brain's fried. It used it again late in the first season in the new footage created by Toei. But for the most part, yes, it does not use the Mammoth Shield very much in Power Rangers.
Yeah.
I think it may have been a little bit more commonly used in Jew Ranger, but if so, not by much.
Yeah.
And that, of course, is the reason why the Megazord has to show up in this episode, because that's the Sentai footage they have available. You know, in Jew Ranger, the Megazord is actually a living being.
Yeah.
Which comes out of its own accord in that situation to confront Dragon Ranger.
Yeah.
Who then shoots energy bolts at it.
And also, when the Green Ranger's fighting the other four Rangers, there's a bit of an editing oops where it shows the same part of the battle twice.
Did that originally, or is that a problem for Remastered?
It's a new problem.
Oops.
Yeah.
It was a mistake on their part.
Yeah, it still has, but it still uses the audio from the part that the copied footage replaced.
I don't remember that. I'll have to go back and look at that again. So what did they replace in that battle? Let's see.
Well, there's a short sequence where Blue's on the ground and he's fighting Pink and Yellow. That was replaced with more of him fighting Blue and Black.
You mean Green's on the ground?
No, Blue's on the ground in one shot in the part that got replaced.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, the link that I just put in.
Well, it looks like they just wanted to cut out Green Ranger kicking Pink and Yellow in the chest.
Yeah.
Just kind of stupid.
Okay, but this does remind me of one other interesting thing they did for this episode, which is when Tommy is fighting the putties on the beach, they give him all kinds of energy powers.
Yeah. Which doesn't make much sense, really.
Yeah, I mean, the whole point of that battle was that he was supposed to fight the putties all on his own, right?
Right.
But then he's shown using these energized punches and such.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not really in the spirit of the competition there, Tommy.
Yeah.
However, it does make one part of this look a little bit less stupid, which is the part where Tommy is staring at his fist before he takes down the last putty. In the original one, where there's no energy glow, it's like, what? But in this one, it's like, hey, why is my hand glowing like that?
And plus, let's see, competing in using powers in something where he's supposed to just use his own skill and not the powers, he's the bad guy. Of course he's going to cheat.
But even so, you know, it completely changes the meaning of that scene. I guess.
Yeah.
Or he's just that good.
Well, whatever.
Yeah.
In the previous episode they do the same thing with one of Jason's unmorphed punches when he was fighting Tommy? So really everybody's just screwing around with their powers all the time from the look of it.
Yeah.
But still the word of the day is betrayed.
Yeah.
Which is just ridiculous, I think.
But in the best possible way.
Yes.
But I also like that they're continuing to dress up the teleportation special effects.
Yeah.
But seriously, their idea of a good effect is to slap Betrayed in the middle of it? You may as well just slap Pwned in the damn thing.
Well,
maybe next episode. And then it gets even better, too, because in the next shot, they superimpose the headshots of the five Rangers with an X over Red Ranger's face.
Yes. And then Goldor draws attention to the Power Morpher that's missing some stickers.
Right.
Yeah.
Oops.
Of course, him holding up the Morpher now is just like saying, hey kid, guess what? You can't buy this.
Yeah, that's kind of a shame, isn't it? Well, they can get the Mix and Morph base. That's almost the same thing.
No, it's not.
And then, of course, just like last week, the final shot in the credits, they've freeze-framed it and put speech bubbles on it.
Yay.
Could they not have chosen a better phrase than "I need Dinozord power," though?
Obviously not.
They already used Betrayed.
Well, that doesn't fit here any better than it did in the other scene, though. But yeah, that's Green with Evil Part 2. But it's going to get even better from here, I'm sure. Like Paladin said, maybe next week we'll have Pwned.
In a Cybernet space cube.
Yes. Alright, Paladin, why don't you go ahead and tell us about this past week of Ghostager.
Let's see, episode 8, right? That was the most recent subtitled one? Yeah, eight. Yeah. Sorry, I'm back on topic. Okay. Well, the UFO of the week hits Alada in his morphed form with some kind of attack that apparently does nothing. But then after the monster runs away from the fight, they find out that Alada can't change back from Ranger form. He's stuck in his suit.
Uh-oh. That sounds like a recipe for wacky misadventures.
Of course. And they, of course, have to hide him from the professor where they live, otherwise he'll figure out who they really are.
Meanwhile, Nozomu has an interesting fantasy sequence.
No. Nothing Nozomu does is interesting in any sense.
Well, Gosei Red going to the grocery store and the doctor and trying to get a haircut is pretty amusing.
Maybe a little bit.
I thought it was funny. Especially the haircut part.
And for whatever reason, the spell or whatever the monster hit him with just keeps switching him between human form and ranger form at inconvenient times.
Well, okay. What the monster is able to do is to affect machines and people to where they cannot control their actions correctly anymore. So as this becomes more progressed throughout the episode, the symptoms grow worse.
Right. And
I think I liked this when it was an episode of Freakazoid better.
He's got a good point.
Well, and nobody said this was an original plot.
Alada tries to overcome things by getting back control of his Skyic powers and accidentally ends up electrocuting the professor.
Too bad.
Right idea, wrong Amachi.
Bad aim.
And eventually when they get towards the end, they have to fight the monster again, and Alada has to summon his header for Gosei Dragon, but because of the spell, the card for it has gone blank.
And in what is sure to be remembered as the best move ever,
he grabs a set of crayons that were abandoned by a schoolboy and actually tries to draw on Gosei Dragon's header.
Yep.
Yeah. But because he's such a terrible artist and didn't use any of the right colors or designs for it, it looks nothing like it.
Oops.
And somehow the Tensoder reconverts it into a real Gosei card and summons the Exotic Brothers.
Burning Justice.
Yes. Apparently the infection spreads even more.
And so we get the Exotic set.
Yeah. Four lazy repaints of Dragon Header. You know it's bad when even the show itself goes out of the way to admit that they're lazy repaints.
But they're only going to be used one time.
Probably, and good riddance
to that.
Which
they also went out of their way to elaborate for us.
Not right. Quite as good as the spider car, but still.
Okay. But yeah, my favorite part of that episode was the ideas of Gosei Red going about his normal business. As I watched that, I decided that they should have done an episode of Dino Thunder like that while Tommy was trapped in his suit, where he tries to live his life stuck as a Power Ranger, instead of just sitting in his basement all the time.
That might have been cool, but probably just because it's Tommy.
Well, it just would have been funny to do once, you know.
Yeah. And
okay. Yes?
In the end of the episode, I was wrong last week. It's not a new ending song, it's just new ending footage.
with a very, very minor remix to small parts of the song.
Yeah, and they are
featuring
using
Gosei mic.
Using the Gosei mic in the ending, and it is horrifying.
Yeah.
Power Ranger karaoke.
Yeah, there's a reason that similar devices like that fell out of favor in America in, like, 1990.
Yeah.
Okay, since Hey Mickey is not here this week, I'll run down episode 29 of Masked Rider Double. Following up on the end of last week's episode, where Masked Rider Double Heat Trigger Form is trying to pull off a double maximum drive, he is literally consumed with burning justice, by which I mean he is blazing on fire, trying to execute his new twin maximum attack. But this leaves Shotaro injured by the overload of power and using two Gaia memory finishers at one time. Weather Dupont essentially says that tickles, before leaving with Terror to have tea. Now, if you think I'm making that part up, I'm not.
The scary thing is I don't think you're making it up.
Terror, having de-transformed from Masked Rider XL, punches Philip, who still wants to save Lily, the young magician. Meanwhile, a charming dinner takes place at the Sonozaki residence, wherein Dr. Isaka, a.k.a. Weather Dupont, demonstrates his ability to clean out the drunken buffet, which is apparently a side effect of loss of Gaia memories with Driver. He also reveals that he has multiple memory ports on his body, and explains that his goal in life is to absorb every memory power ever created. The things some people do with their free time, I'm telling you. Later, Philip punches Terui back and declares that as Shotaro has taught him in the past, they've now made up. Kind of an odd manner of social behavior, not socialism. But, I mean, it's Japan, what are you going to do anyway?
Yeah.
Having made all nice, though, they go to enact Philip's plan to save Lily. But then Weather Dupont shows up again, expresses his interest in the invisibility memory he had earlier placed into Lily's body, and a great fight is had by all as XL and Fang Joker team up against Weather Dupont. And they pull off a twin maximum the right way with one maximum drive per rider. And nobody catches on fire. Oh, and just to prove Hey Mickey wrong from his idea last week, it looks like Dr. Isaka has moved into the Sonozaki mansion, and Saiko is shown waiting in a nightgown for him to come home from fighting the Masked Riders. Yay.
So business as usual.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, we're going to go ahead and take a break and come back to our discussion topic with our guest panelist for this week, TFG1 Mike from the Geekcast Radio Network.
You're listening to Superhero Time. Transformers, more than meets the eye.
This is Brian Kilby, host and founder of Radio Free Cybertron, the Transformers Internet Radio Show, online since 1999. Check us out at tfradio.net while you're there. Check out our other shows, New Soundwave, where we explore the geek news from a geek perspective on a nice 30-minute package. We recorded immediately after Radio Free Cybertron, so we're all pissed off and ready to shut up. And RSC Throwback, where it's one man, one microphone, and years of lonely. Also on the site, we have blogs from our staff members, an archive going back to 1999, and piles of awesome. Check us out, tfradio.net, follow us on Twitter, at tfradio, and join us on Facebook, just search for Radio Free Cybertron, all that and more. Go to tfradio.net. Do it now. Radio Free Cybertron, we are the voice of trans fandom and the official podcast of tformers.com.
Superhero Time.
Okay, we're back. Joining us for our discussion topic this week to fill in for the inexcusably absent Hey Mickey, we have TFG1 Mike from the Geekcast Radio Network family of podcasts. Thanks very much for sitting in with us tonight, Mike.
No problem.
Our discussion topic for this week is the first half of Power Rangers Turbo, the including Turbo, a Power Rangers movie, up to the point where they changed the cast halfway through. We're just going to do like a general overview tonight. So,
what are some of your thoughts on Power Rangers Turbo? A lot of people think that this set of episodes is some of the weaker stuff from the series.
I would have to agree with that line of thought, really.
I liked the movie. The movie was okay. It was still the old cast, and then of course they brought in Jason and Kimberly as guest stars.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all right for the most part up until the Twitter theater episode we will be talking about. That was a lame power transfer. That was like a lame copy of the power transfer, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can totally see where you're coming from with that.
Yeah, so I'm pretty much, I pretty much watched through most of the first half. There's a couple episodes that I skipped over, but I noticed pretty much one thing. The production values themselves were some of the highest the series had. Nearly every monster of the week had a American costume that was used. Very little of the Car Ranger footage was used that the Car Ranger non-Zord footage was used.
Right.
Very little. Pretty much the only time that you were going to absolutely have it was when the turbo carts were being used.
Well, part of that's due to the nature of Car Ranger and its over-the-top silliness as a series. A large portion of the footage would probably be unusable.
Right. And the sets were excellent, especially in Honey, I Shrunk the Rangers. You had full sets. Those sets, Honey, I Shrunk the Rangers, excellent sets that actually looked like they were tiny. I mean, it looked like a bunch of small things around.
Yeah, they did really well to simultaneously expand the set of the Subcraft while still keeping it literally teeny tiny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, of course, the main problem seems mostly due to executive meddling. Now, Justin himself, the excuse for having him at the high school was kind of bad.
Yeah, that
especially
was pretty bad.
With Turbo, there wasn't much of a point to having him at the high school, considering no one else was except for Catherine.
Right.
Yeah.
And half of that was to keep her with Justin.
But I think what they were really doing with that was to establish Justin for being there for the second half of the series, when there was more involvement with the school again.
But still, with half of that, they wouldn't have known it that at the time that they started that, because of course, originally Saban was only planning on replacing two of the cast at the start.
Well, see, the way I heard about this before was that all of the previous cast were basically done and wanted out. Mm. And they talked them into staying around for another half a season to make a smoother transition.
Now, actually, what I've heard was that Saban was wanting to replace two of them, and they found out through a want ad in the paper. The cast members found out through a want ad that Saban had put in the paper.
Man, that's a serious dick move.
Yeah. And then the other two decided, might as well go ahead and leave. So then they Saban worked on Rick and Morty. But the cast replacement itself worked better than the others simply because you still had the older cast there until they were written out.
Okay, so do you remember which two of the original cast members were the ones who really wanted out in the first place?
I don't remember, but I think it was that there were two that, don't remember which were the two that Saban was initially going to write out and didn't tell them, but then the others decided to leave after they found out that, Saban's going to be writing you guys out, and you didn't even know that.
Yeah, I mean, I had always heard it that they wanted to be done with Power Rangers and had to be convinced to stay around a little bit longer. But
it was probably Jason David Frank and Johnny Young Bosch I can't be certain on that. I don't have any facts to back that up, but I'm assuming that's who it would be because they're the ones that were around the longest at that time.
Yeah, Jason David Frank makes sense because he had a lot less screen time in these Turbo episodes than he'd had in Zio.
Yeah.
Johnny was he was getting a lot of focus time in these episodes, so I'm not sure he was one of the ones who wanted out. They were really trying to expand what his character was doing with the
I think most of this comes from a interview with the guy who played Justin.
Right.
Blake Foster.
Yeah. And of course I imagine that it was pretty much Dream Come True act as a Power Rangers and then Saban's dumping all the guys that you that were awesome on it.
Yeah. I don't like the effects they used on Justin's Ranger character though.
Yeah.
I don't get the whole effect thing where after he morphs they have to double him in size. That makes no sense.
Well, if he was running around 4.5 feet tall, he wouldn't fit in with the Sentai footage.
Right.
And plus,
be really amused to see them do that, but, you know.
But it's not like it hadn't been done before with Sentai, with Kiba Ranger and King Ranger.
Right.
I only know the U.S. version of Rangers, so I don't know anything about the Japanese stuff.
Well, in Die Ranger, which is where the Season 2 Zord footage came from, and the White Ranger costume, the White Ranger was a little kid.
A perverted kid.
Yeah.
And same thing with the O-Ranger, which is where Zio came from, the Gold Ranger, was also a kid.
Although he's also technically like a few million years old, even though he still looks like a kid.
But still, they both grew when morphing.
Yeah.
His growth got stunted when he was little, so he stayed short for thousands of years. It's fine.
Yeah.
Midget Rangers, the new series.
Actually, Geki Ranger, which is what we got as Jungle Fury, had one episode where Red Ranger was morphed as a little kid, but they did not use that in Jungle Fury.
But yeah, and of course, the big problem was with the early Turbo episodes was the writing for the civilian plot, which often were terrible.
Yeah.
I would find the detonator this week.
Well, one of the episodes I watched this afternoon was Built for Speed, which it was also one of the episodes that used a lot of the Car Ranger footage, which, I mean, okay, for one thing I can tell why they did not use a lot of the Sentai footage at that point, which was because in the instances where you do see them use a bunch of it, the Japanese people running around are really obvious, and there's a lot of Japanese signage around, too. You know, it's stuff that's hard to disguise.
Right.
The civilian subplot for that episode was some of Adam's stunt crew friends going to have a drag race.
I remember.
And it was really painfully forced.
Yeah.
I haven't watched a lot of the Ranger stuff in a long time. I don't even remember when Bulk and Skull got turned into chimps. And where the hell did Ernie go?
He went to South America. In reality, I believe he went into the hospital.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah.
Health problems.
That kind of sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah. But still, when the hell did Bulk and Skull get turned into chimps?
The first 3 episodes of the series.
Yeah.
Because at the time, Paul Schreier and Jason Narvey were off working on what would have been a series just for Bulk and Skull.
Oh. Where they're running a hotel.
Yeah.
With Elvez.
Yes.
Wow.
I know. Doesn't it just hurt sometimes, the stuff that we miss out on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about a little more the big controversial thing in Turbo, which, of course, is Justin.
Any discussion you'll have about Turbo will probably start with involving him and his participation in Turbo.
Yes.
Now, I've never really had much of a problem with Justin. In fact, he was one of the... he's a better actor than most of what Power Rangers has had up to that point.
Okay, let me butt in here for a second, Fort Max. Now, to say that Blake Foster was a better actor might be a little inaccurate. I think it's that his acting skill was about on par with the other people around him, but it doesn't look as bad because he is a little kid.
Right.
It's kind of like
Thing about Foster is that the whole point of I thought the whole point of bringing him in the first place was, didn't they have, I think it was the Fox Kids Countdown when that was still around, didn't they have like some contest where he actually won the role to come onto the movie? And it was kind of like, you know, hey kids, you could be the next Power Ranger type of deal. Wasn't that the whole point?
I don't remember, but I think half of it was that the guy who played Rocky hurt his back towards the end of Zio.
Yeah. Steve Cardenas,
Yeah.
Which sucks for him, really.
Yeah, it is kind of sad, except, you know, before the first Power Morphicon was running, nobody really seen Steve in most of the time that he'd been off Power Rangers, and for a long time there was a rumor going around that, you know, he had gotten older and fatter and balder and was living in some trailer in Southern California, which turned out to be completely untrue. He looked basically like he did when he was on Zio.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the acting thing might not have worked out for him, but, you know, could be worse. He could look like David Yost.
Yeah.
Has anybody even seen David Yost since his Power Ranger days? I don't think I've ever seen him since then.
Not since the Yellow Ranger's funeral.
He's executive produced a number of Sci-Fi Channel original movies.
I thought he executive produced reality shows for Fox.
Wow.
There's a difference?
Not really, but there's a factual difference, not really a difference in matter of...
Both of them probably have about the same budget as early Power Rangers.
So he should be used to it. We touched on that a little bit when we were talking about Zio, where in some of the later outtakes for the series, you could see where David Yost was getting really fed up with his part in the show.
Yeah. Back to Justin, overall, right. He was one of the least painful parts of the series, at least in the early parts, when there was a lot of pain.
Okay, I mean, yeah, I can agree that in comparison, Justin is not that much worse than anything else going on in that part of Turbo. But, I mean, I think your opinion is kind of an uncommon one.
Yeah. He's not involved in as much in the terrible, terrible, painfully forced plots.
Well, okay.
There was the episode where he was competing
in a drag race soapbox racer tournament. There was the episode about his birthday. There was the episode where all he could do was tell lies.
That one was kind of funny.
I'm just saying, there is a whole set of episodes which are all about Justin in the civilian plot.
Yeah. Right, but what I'm saying is those plots aren't as bad as, say, drag race where everyone's wearing costumes right out of Happy Days.
Well, yeah, that was part of why I was saying that episode was really forced. On the other hand, it gave us one of our few uses of the American Turbo Megazord costume.
Yeah.
Which I'm surprised they didn't try to make more use out of, since they did have access to the monster costumes also. You know, I mean, it doesn't cost them any more to send a Megazord costume and a monster costume out in the middle of nowhere to fight than it does to...
So the scenes where it was holding the cars was American footage?
Yeah. You couldn't tell? I mean, that's another point I wanted to bring up. There is a big gulf in the quality between the Japanese and American footage.
Yeah, I think Turbo is one of the biggest examples of conflicting quality footage.
Probably the difference in the media that it was filmed on.
Well, I just wonder sometimes if Toei didn't give Fox and Saban just like low quality copies to work with. Washed out. The picture is dark and a little fuzzy. It's really poor.
I don't think that's the case. I think it's that usual that the Sentai stuff was kind of filmed using cheaper stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
the Sentai stuff, I believe, was originally filmed and then transferred to videotape. So it's like watching some of the Doctor Who episodes where all the older Doctor Who episodes where, of course, all the on location was film and the soundstage was on tape, and they would splice them together, and it would you could tell the difference.
Either way, I mean, it's not really important to specific, but there was a really big difference in the picture quality.
Yeah.
Which I also think that might be why they downplayed the use of the Sentai footage in Turbo also. They were totally aware of how different it looked one to the other.
And there's another reason for that. You mind if I talk about the Sentai thing a little?
Yeah, that's fine.
Well, Gekiso Sentai Car Ranger was created as a 20th anniversary show for the Japanese franchise. It's a direct parody and humorous take on every major Sentai tradition and recurring trend.
So it's similar to what Bokanger did 10 years later.
A little bit, yes.
What the?
What?
Oh, Mike made some noise, I don't know.
No, it wasn't me.
Well, we've already had that cold start, so just keep going, Paladin.
Basically, because of the way Car Ranger works and plays off various traditions, which wouldn't make any sense here, then a great majority of the footage then just became unadaptable.
Right. The same thing happened with turning a lot of Abba Ranger into Dino Thunder. You know, a lot of that footage was discarded because it was too goofy to use. Another thing that made Car Ranger different was that it had a complete shift in tone from O-Ranger before it because, as I've understood it, O-Ranger almost got Sentai canceled.
More or less, but that was also due to some real-world events that were occurring at the same time as it.
Right.
Which kind of made what was happening in O-Ranger seem like bad taste.
I mean, that sometimes you can't help it. That just kind of happens.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Car Ranger was a big tone shift for Sentai, which had largely played up the dramatic angle for the prior years.
Right, so what America did was basically take the over-the-top silly parody footage and try to play it serious in some cases.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta give them points for having high ambitions for this.
Yeah.
You know, they had an idea for a story they wanted to tell, even after the overarching story they wanted to carry on from Zio got axed, because Zio even was doing poorly.
Yeah.
See, what were we talking about before, though? We kind of got off on a tangent here, too. Yeah. There's a lot of Justin plots in the first half of Turbo, and taken as a whole with all the other goofiness that's going on, and I don't mean goofy in a funny way, I mean goofy in a what were they thinking, you know, it ends up not looking quite so bad.
Yeah, especially when you have Alpha 6.
Yeah.
Don't get me started. Oh, God. When I was watching the, I keep wanting to call it the original transfer episode. Oh, God. When I was watching the, Passing the Torch, I wanted to just choke Alpha 6. That is just horrible, horrible voice acting.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It sounds like a bad Rosie O'Donnell impersonation.
Trying to be street.
Boy. Yeah.
Well, that's what Rosie O'Donnell sounded like. yeah, I mean, Alpha got better the following season when Wendy Lee started voicing him.
Well, of course, that was... They basically decided, okay, make him like Alpha 5 was.
Right.
Right.
And of course, back on Alpha 5 is, of course, he then was back in his old body for passing.
Well, yeah, that was a little inconsistency all the way around. First, in the movie, they don't explain why Alpha has this shiny new body. And then, several weeks later, when Alpha 5 comes back, he's back in his original body. But, of course, that's just because they only had one Alpha 6 suit.
And, of course, they could use movie budget for that suit.
Yeah.
Right. That's another point, too. Thank you. You got me back to what I was trying to think of before. Turbo really benefited a lot from having the movie budget for the creation of the American villain costume. Because if you look at Elgar and Rygog especially, you know, those are completely different, much improved suits over the Sentai version.
Yeah.
I mean, those Sentai suits would have looked terrible on a movie theater screen. Not that Turbo was any kind of theatrical masterpiece or anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Algar was just the much less scarier version of Goldar.
I thought Rygog was the much less scarier version of Goldar.
Elgar was more Rito than anything.
Yeah, Rito was a little bit of Babu, I would say.
But yeah, of course, they also had the movie budget for the new Powered Chamber set and Divatox's sub.
Well, the interior set for the subcraft was completely different between the movie and the TV series. The movie one was huge inside.
Yeah. Right. But of course, I think they used a lot of the designs and props from the movie set and just had a smaller version of it.
Well, I think they used the movie budget to redress the Power Chamber set, since it was one of their local sets they'd already established. But I'm pretty sure the Subcraft interior and the Zord cockpits were created at Fox's facilities, which is why they couldn't keep using.
Yeah, well, of course, with the sub, they probably were going to have limited space, but I think they did reuse parts of the set for the TV version.
The Power Chamber, the inside of it changed, but I don't think in the entire span of the U.S. Power Rangers, any of the series, when they had the Power Chamber, I don't think the exterior ever changed.
No, it didn't. They blew it up.
It was based on a real building.
Yeah. It was a... What was that? I can't remember.
It's a building at some Jewish summer camp, I think, that's in the area.
But it certainly looks alien, doesn't it?
And I mean, that building's also been used in Star Trek The Next Generation and a bunch of other series and movies.
And the rocky outcropping they digitally placed it on has also been used in just about everything that ever goes to the California desert.
Yes.
It's a really well-known filming location. But yeah,
Power Rangers itself even used it for Ninja Quest.
Right.
So hey, it's those rocks that the command center's always at.
It's a very mystical rock formation. It just appears all over the place at important points.
Yeah.
But yeah, the command center building remained unchanged throughout the entire time it existed.
And of course, the main reason for that is because they would do on location shots with them with the Rangers outside the command center, so they just go over to the building it was based on.
Kind of convenient, isn't it?
Yeah, yep.
Just a little bit.
I was going to say it's kind of like that old plot device called the Matrix of Leadership.
Oh boy. Okay, well, getting away from that a little bit, what did you guys think of how they were introducing possible careers for the outgoing Power Rangers?
It was passable, I think.
Yeah, it worked on because they were on with judging by assuming that the Rangers are using Tommy as the base age that all the Rangers up until Justin were, is that. Yeah, they were going to be graduating. They would have graduated after Zeo.
Uh-huh.
So they obviously needed something. And on, yeah, kind of, it was partially stuff that, okay, how to get this to work in Turbo, and we need to do something with them.
So, of course, they make Tommy a race car driver.
And I think that was mostly just for the sake of the footage.
That was mostly for the sake of establishing why the stuff was cars, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that with the turbo transfer thing, one of the reasons why I don't like that whole scene is, yes, they do make a point of saying, hey, you know, you have to grow up sometime and you can't always be a ranger and you have to move on for the rest of your life. That's great. But the way they introduced the new characters, there wasn't this whole side quest of finding some sort of strange silver sword or whatever like there was in the original transfer one. And they made no mention of the fact that they were going away. They just said that, yeah, everybody has to grow up sometime. Whereas the original transfer episode in Mighty Morphin, those three actors were leaving the show.
They had left.
They'd already left, yeah.
Right.
Right, exactly. Their contract was up or they didn't want to do it anymore or whatever. And they said And they said in that one that they're going over to this peace conference or whatever.
But still, they had all. But still, I'm the.
Right, the actors have been gone for like 10 episodes by that point. It was just creative editing.
Yeah.
But I mean, no, I understand the point Mike's trying to make here, which was that they wrote the characters as leaving Angel Grove, whereas in Turbo, you know, Tommy, Kat, Adam, and Tanya might as well have just been still tooling about town the whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
It's mostly just a matter of, oh, you guys are kind of old now, you're fired.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's like, oh, well, they're not going anywhere. They're still going to be around. They're just not going to be Power Rangers. So it's like, wow.
But, you know, the horrible. Same thing you can say for Rocky also, because, you know, they didn't say he was going anywhere. He just couldn't be a Ranger anymore.
Well, didn't they already handle that in the movie? Because that's how Justin came in.
Well, yeah, but Rocky was Rocky turned up.
He was hurt.
Yeah, he turned up again in Shift into Turbo.
Yeah, and because he was graduating too.
Right. You know, they carried him over and just said that he was going to be busy with other stuff to do.
Yeah,
like his karate school and having a broken back.
Yeah.
They didn't actually say broken back, but we all know that's what they were thinking.
True.
Well, but yeah, I totally get what you're saying, and I agree with you. It would have been better if they had established that the four Rangers who were leaving were going out somewhere away from the city, and that's why they couldn't be Rangers anymore. But it would be a little bit awkward to have all four of them have to go at once again like it was with the original three.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I completely understand and agree with what you're saying there.
And did we really need a multicolored lightning symbol on the rock?
Sure.
The whole Power Ranger symbol?
Of course.
Sure. It was on the vortex doors in the basement of the command center.
Yeah, that thing's everywhere.
Yeah.
I did like, however, that they brought Alpha 5 and Zordon back. That was kind of cool.
And dug up some parts of the old command center set.
Yeah.
Yeah, that they set up a little bit of wreckage. Yeah, apparently Zordon doesn't even need a tube to project himself into. Just a little base thing at the bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is a topic really for another episode. But it's strange to me that Zordon was granted his freedom from whatever time warp prison thing he was in before and sent home. But every time after that, when he shows up, he's still represented as a floating head.
Yeah.
Well,
because the only thing we knew him as was the floating head outside of the movie continuity, where we saw him as a head in sort of a Rock of Gibraltar body when he was crumbling and dying from Ivanhoe's killing him.
Though, of course, part of it may have been that he would actually be able to project somewhere other than the command center power chamber.
True.
That's possible.
So he was probably chilling in a tube on Eltar.
Yeah.
Well, plus, we've established Zordon had a body in the TV series continuity. Because
right.
In one of the first season episodes, they use some leftover footage from Jew Ranger to demonstrate Zordon going after the singing squash.
Right.
That pronunciation still sounds wrong to me.
Yeah,
Jew Ranger?
Yes.
So, in other words, you're saying that Jewish Power Rangers is a bad thing?
Of course not. Ooh, after all, the command center is a
right
Jewish
there.
Temple.
Oh, wow.
Well, Lord Zed was Jewish.
So?
I don't know. I just like to bring that up whenever the opportunity presents itself.
Come on. Optimus Prime's Jewish. Nobody seems to have a problem with him.
Okay, but like I said, this is kind of a topic for another
okay,
occasion.
Okay, that one's just Family Guy. The other is, in the actual show, Zed has a very, very Jewish wedding.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I even mentioned it now.
Of course, considering
see what you started,
that
X-Men.
I regret everything.
Of course,
everything.
Considering Chaim Saban and Shuki Levi are Jewish, well, why not?
Right.
Okay, getting back to the subject, you know, we talked a little bit about Justin, but I think there's something even worse in the first half of Power Rangers Turbo. And since I brought up Zordon, this kind of follows. Demetria.
Ugh. Yeah. What the hell were they on?
Well, okay. Yeah, I mean, the gimmick for the first half of the season was that she could only communicate by asking questions.
Or that she only bothered communicating by asking questions.
Yeah, that was going to be what I was going to follow it up with. It's either that or she's just kind of a dick and, you know, won't give anybody a straight answer about anything.
I would have much rather have had Dulcea stripping inside that thing than Demetria in there.
Wow.
That's not wrong.
But just to admit it so openly, you know.
Demetria is by far one of the worst characters.
Well, actually, I found that it worked.
On the good guy's side.
I found that it kind of worked. Of course, when she first came, she would only speak in questions. And then as it went on, she would start speaking in declarative statements and stuff more often as the speaking questions decreased over the course of the series, which I found work considering that the more she's with the locals, why not?
Well, she started speaking regularly with the second half of the series, so I would also take that to be that she knew the new Rangers were just complete idiots.
Yeah.
But still, even in the first half, frequency of her speaking questions started to lower.
I could agree with that to a point because, first of all, one of the other differences between the original power transfer and passing the torch is that Zordon Alpha found the three replacements because they had to, whereas passing the torch, they brought in these new characters like TJ and Cassian.
Zordon and Alpha didn't find them.
Yes, they did.
It's kind of half and half.
They chose them, though. It wasn't as though we're in Passing the Torch where Tommy chose TJ or Kat chose Cassie.
Well, Rocky, Adam, and Aisha, when they had known for episodes before becoming Power Rangers who the Power Rangers were.
Right.
Yeah, they were already in the club.
Same thing,
and they were already in on. They were already in on it. They were already helping out.
Yeah, they were in on it, but the way that the power transfer presented it was that Zordon and Alpha had chosen them, much like with the whole choice for the new White Ranger happened, where they made a choice for that.
Okay, well, the way I see this going is that out of the Rangers' non-Ranger friends, they could either choose Rocky, Adam, and Aisha, or they could choose Vulcan Skull. You know.
Yeah.
I
just wish there was more of a mystery to it, like with the whole White Ranger thing it was. Like, they didn't know who they were going to choose, but they were going to choose somebody.
They were going to choose the guy who had already been a Ranger for a while already.
True.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it all makes sense in the context of the situation, as much as anything in Power Rangers makes sense at any time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, if anything, Rita chose who the White Ranger was.
Rita? By choosing who the Green Ranger was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's going a ways back with the whole idea, but you're completely right. And, well, yeah, Rita helped to choose who the White Ranger was, and so did Zed in a way by completely destroying the Green Ranger powers.
Yeah.
You know, it all contributes together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, Demetria was a really irritating point in this part of the series.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And since you mentioned her, we should probably bring up another somewhat irritating point in the series.
Diva Talks?
Larigo.
Oh. Well, yeah, but Larigo only appeared
Larigo
for the movie.
Larigo was there in the movie and appeared for a short time in Shift into Turbo and was never seen again.
Right, and it didn't need to be. You know, Larigo was only in the TV series as a plot device to get rid of Zordon and Alpha.
And in the movie as a plot device to give the new powers or whatever the hell they came up with.
Yeah. Larigo reminds me of Gwildor from Masters of the Universe.
Or an Ewok.
Yeah, a talking Ewok.
A talking magic Ewok. Ewoks talked, you just couldn't understand what they were saying.
Yeah.
Okay, but since someone mentioned it,
I think he looks like Furbus's grandfather.
Oh, boy. Well, there's our obligatory Saban's Masked Rider reference for this week.
Yeah, quota fulfilled.
Okay, but yeah, since somebody brought it up before, there's Diva Talks, who I think was one of the really strong points of the entire series.
Diva Talks was awesome.
I don't really like this Diva Talks.
Actress, technically?
Right. Right, because Hillary Shepherd got pregnant and had to, you know, she couldn't wear the Diva Talks costume at that point, of course.
Yeah. That
would have turned.
Would have made for a weird plot turn.
For the first half of Turbo, including into the new cast a little bit, Carol Hoyt played the role of Diva Talks and played Demetria for the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, which would have been a plot point if she'd stayed in the role.
Not really. It would have been a plot point if they hadn't dropped various things.
Right.
Okay, so
it
would have
been a plot point if they ever bothered to follow up on the plot point.
Right. Yeah, who was playing Diva Talks had nothing to do with it.
Even having not seen Turbo, a Power Rangers movie, until after I had watched a lot of the series, I always thought Hillary Shepherd's performance as Diva Talks was a lot better than Carol Hoyt.
Yeah, I'd have to agree.
Yeah.
I mean, Carol Hoyt has her moments, and she can more or less pull off the role. It's just, there's just something about how Hillary Shepherd manages to do it that really makes the character more.
Yeah.
Also, I don't think Diva Talks' mask quite fit Carol Hoyt correctly.
Now, one thing that I did like is her Diva Talks is nothing but detonators, and then use the monsters to distract the Rangers from the detonator.
What were the detonators even supposed to be doing? I mean, what was the point behind that strategy?
The point is, Diva Talks has no originality whatsoever.
Or possibly no real concept on how to fight Power Rangers either.
At least she recognized that. First thing she does, when she realizes she's up against Power Rangers, calls Rita for advice.
Yeah.
That was kind of funny, though.
It's such useful advice, too, really.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Don't.
Yeah.
Actually, I thought Rita's exact words were, "Run!"
Yeah, that sounds like her.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I did not like about Honey, I Shrunk the Rangers is their conclusion that the torpedoes will make them not tiny bugs anymore. That makes no sense whatsoever.
Well, okay, yeah. I can understand the idea that it would make them be not tiny anymore, since the torpedoes do that.
Yeah,
the idea that they would break the spell is a little bit different.
Yeah.
Right. Even as a kid, I found the entire turning into bugs thing kind of pointless.
Yeah.
Well, the monster was a bug, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Kind of a fly thing.
So that's probably where it came from. If it was his power, then that's what...
Well, what it really was for was to add a sense of urgency to the story. You know, they have to get themselves changed back before they completely become bugs. Otherwise, they could be running around inside Diva Talks' ship for as long as they needed to.
And I really like the using the big bad's make my monster grow device.
Right, using it for their own purposes.
That was funny, at least, I guess.
And, of course, that was all Power Rangers there.
Yeah.
Right. And, of course, it also turned Bulk and Skull back to humans.
But they ended up invisible.
Just for a little while, though.
Yeah.
But that's getting a little ahead of ourselves.
And it does make sense, considering they have torpedoes that make the monsters grow, you can kind of expect that all their other change-the-form stuff works on the same similar technology.
I guess, yeah.
Maybe, yeah. But like I said, it makes perfect sense for the Rangers to think the torpedoes would make them stop being little tiny. But, you know, to expect it to break the bug thing it's asking you to reach a little bit more.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Well, considering Shrinkisect turns into a more buggy bug when he shrinks.
Right. No, I'm not disputing the idea of the Rangers being turned into bugs, necessarily.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of how
the missile or the torpedo was able to break the bug spell.
Right.
Because explosions make everything better.
Apparently so.
Yes, remember, bugs are weak to fire.
That's your Pokemon tip of the day.
Yes.
no, I think Divatox is one of the best villains in Power Rangers. I mean, she's certainly up there.
Yeah. Considering there's, well, the only ones that she would really, really be in competition with would be Early Zed, Astronema, and Rancic.
I'm...
What about the, oh, God, what are they? The Machine King. Because I remember in the, was it the trans, no, the Honey, I Shrunk the Rangers thing. Her mother said they were pirates. Yeah. Weren't the machine people pirates as well?
No.
No, sorry, you failed.
Okay.
It's okay.
They were the Royal House of Gadgetry.
They were.
So where's Brain when you need him?
Huh?
I said, so where's Brain the dog when you need him?
Oh, wrong kind of gadgets.
Unfortunately, yes.
For a moment, I thought you meant as in the Brain. You know, Maurice LaMarche.
No.
Which,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, sure you do. You watch Pinky and
the
Brain.
No, I don't know what you're talking about. La, 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 la.
Boy, you'd think like Hasbro was suing you or something.
exactly.
Okay, anyway. shoot, where was I? What were we talking about before you started dragging me
pirates.
Off the brain stuff?
Pirates and Divatox being one of the better villains.
Yeah, okay. No offense to Melody Perkins, but she's not a great actress.
Yeah.
No.
Her Astronema was always kind of on the stiff side.
Yeah.
It wasn't really a memorable sort of role for any acting quality.
Yeah.
Right.
It's psycho
quality. But of course, this is also in taking the writing into account as well.
I don't think the writing was so bad. It's just the way the lines were executed. Which, I mean, that's not the last time it would happen either. In Lightspeed Rescue, Viper's actress was horribly wooden.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things about Divatox. The two actresses they got were really good actresses. Mm-hmm. You know, they had acted in other stuff before Power Rangers, which is actually a little bit sad for them when you think about it, but, you know.
Money, dear boy.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so is there anything
else? But of course, Rancic was awesome. So,
yeah, Rancic was great.
Yeah,
the Rancic's actor was really good, but for most of Time Force, they did not give him a chance to really shine in the role.
Yeah, his best part later got cut out of syndication, unfortunately.
And yeah, there's that, and also Reinforcements from the Future, which really showed off Vernon Wells' acting abilities in that role.
Yeah.
Okay, so is there anything else about Power Rangers Turbo we want to cover before we go quickly into Twitter Theater?
No.
Well, I really like the opening parking lot.
Opening parking lot?
The Zord storage.
Oh, okay. Is that a parking lot? I thought it was a highway.
Mm. It's both.
Well, yes, highway often will become a parking lot.
Well, I was assuming it was a parking lot considering that the few cars that were on it weren't moving.
Well, yeah, but anytime you see the Zords, like, rolling down a street or anything, you know, the cars are always stationary anyway. You can't necessarily base it on that.
Well, you would see them moving in Lightspeed Rescue at times.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's a later series where things had gotten a little more advanced, presumably.
And the cars that were on the streets were often parked on the very sides where
you live in one of those towns. You learn real quick to get out of the way when a giant robot's rolling up behind you.
Yeah, and plus they were all on the very edge, so they looked like they were parked to begin with,
or they pulled over to the side like you do when a police car comes up behind you.
Still, it's a city, so parallel parking all over the place. So,
or if it's a funeral procession.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that covers our look at the first half of Power Rangers Turbo for this week.
Basically, the plots are often bad. Divatox is awesome and very high production values, at least visually.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. The writing makes it out like they didn't really know what they were doing exactly at that point.
Yeah.
You know, they knew they had the stuff to do, but they did not know what direction it was going to go in. Probably
because
of the...
I,
upcoming cast changes.
Though also, I think one of the biggest mistakes that that the movie made was, okay, with the Zeo powers, either ignore them completely or explain why you aren't using them anymore.
Yeah.
I thought they
it's
did.
One or the other.
Didn't they ignore them completely?
No, I thought they explained it.
Catherine morphs.
She tries to.
Well, mostly morphs when she's falling off the cliff, or when she's hanging on the branch, she summons her Zeonizers, and then when the branch breaks, she morphs. She starts morphing and complete
and
with the
Zeo Ranger
one pink call. So they actually, she actually uses them, but the morphing she almost completely morphs, or she does morph, and then it gets and then when she hits the water, it's knocked off. Or
After that, they decide they need to make the turbo powers because they need something stronger to fight with.
Yeah,
to fight the water.
I guess
into the water at a high speed.
Okay, here's the deal: we're gonna make these new powers, and they're gonna be waterproof this time.
I think it had more to do with the contact from falling from so high than it did with getting wet.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's pretty well established that after Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, every set of powers will cancel out if too much damage is taken.
Right.
Which seems like a really backhanded safety measure.
Well, it would do that even that you would have a hard fall and they demorph, but then it'd be fine again afterwards.
Well, okay. Nobody is saying, though, that the Zeo powers were, you know, screwed up or whatever after that point. They just decided they needed a new set of powers to use to fight Demotox.
Well, it's more
the stuff they needed to.
The problem I find is that they never were brought up again.
Well, is that one fan-made thing that tries to bridge the gap between Zeo and Turbo.
We're not going to talk about Scorpion Raid today.
Yeah, so. I didn't think so, but still.
Forever.
Well, in Forever Red, Tommy morphs with the Zeo powers again, so, I mean, obviously they're still out there somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, considering Forever Red also has unbroken Tyrannosaurus power coin.
We will do a topic on Forever Red another time, because there's a lot of stuff we can talk about that did not make it into the episode.
Yeah.
But for right now, I want to take a quick break. Paladin has got a review for us of the first two Megazords from Power Rangers Turbo. So we're going to go over to that and then come back to Twitter Theater.
Paladin.
Welcome once again to Paladin's Place, a subsidiary of Superhero Time where we take a close look at the giant mecha of Power Rangers. This week, we're focusing on the main machines from Gekiso Sentai Car Ranger, known in America as Power Rangers Turbo, two series which remain prominent in the minds of the fanbase, for entirely different reasons. First up in the Turbo arsenal are the Ranger vehicles, five supercars. In the Japanese footage, it is stated that each Zord is based upon its Ranger's dream vehicle, and while this isn't explicitly stated in the American show, I could certainly accept it as true. By color and number, the Ranger vehicles are Red Lightning, a sleek Mach 5-type race car, Blue Mountain Blaster, the largest of the Zords, ironically driven by the smallest of the Rangers, a rugged 4x4 Jeep-type vehicle here, Green Desert Thunder is a stylized minivan, Yellow Dune Star is an SUV, virtually identical to the design of Desert Thunder, and Pink, though I use that term loosely because the Zord has almost no pink coloring, Wind Chaser, a very handy compact car. Individual Zord modes are pretty simple just by themselves, nothing much to get excited about here. After a unique high-speed combination sequence, we see the gigantic RV Robo, aka the Turbo Megazord. Armed with the traditional saber, as are all Megazords, and also a huge oversized tire-shaped shield. Very nice. The Turbo Megazord itself is boring. There's nothing outright wrong with this design, but there's just nothing here that makes it seem unique or exciting compared to so many other Megazords. It's just average, I suppose. True to form, the Turbo Rangers soon receive help from an outside source, the Blue Centurion, a robotic police officer from the future, who brings along his own personal Zord, an oversized police car known as Sirender. Obviously, this Zord was manufactured in France. The little Robo-Racer here is a much more interesting design, transforming from police car to a robotic patrolman, so it can arrest any evildoers that are about. Articulation here is only average for Sentai fare. Traditional arm and head movement, nothing else more. The arsenal on this guy is kind of impressive. Robo-Racer comes with a blaster cannon, riot shield, survival knife, and a set of handcuffs. Perfectly equipped to handle just about any situation, really. Turbo doesn't exactly start off with a bang in the Zord design. We've got one average Megazord followed by one slightly above average auxiliary Zord. But this is just the start. So tune in next time for more superhero time and the second half of my Car Ranger Mecha review. Look at that, you hear that, daddy-da. No matter what benches wait for you. Glory starts lighting up in the sky. Oh, promising you all the good.
We've already talked a little bit about our Twitter theater episodes for this week, which is Passing the Torch Part 1 and 2. This is the episode where the original four Turbo Rangers switch their powers to another new group, because, heck, they completely aged out of these roles.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just going to go down my list of dislikes of this two-parter really quick.
That'll work.
Comparing it to the original power transfer when the original three Power Rangers had to leave, first of all, this one, they do not set it up whatsoever as far as making it any kind of mystery as who the new characters are going to be. Yes, I know that they were already in on the gag and everything else. They don't make any side mission of having to get something for the power transfer to happen. They just show up in uniform.
Yeah.
That makes no sense whatsoever. Yes, Justin does make a great joke about what am I chopped liver. I laughed at that.
I just yelled out, yes.
Yeah, pretty much.
That to me is an example of the really quality lines they gave Justin throughout the series.
Yeah. Yes. And I don't know what the deal is as far as the animation, as far as the size morphing thing, as far as the Japanese other series. I always found it very jarring to see the fact that Justin had to double in size. That is one of the main problems I find with getting a younger kid, like smaller kid rather than teenager, to play a Power Ranger part, because it's like, wow. What was that reference? What is it? It's kind of like Aladdin, big phenomenal cosmic powers. Itty bitty living space. Makes no damn sense to me. I like seeing Zordon and Alpha 5 back. Alpha 6
needs to die.
I'm trying. XP, I'm so trying right now to not come up with a whole bunch of expletive deleteds, but, you know, pretty much take one of Ender's rants and put it on Alpha 6, and that's me just cursing all the way through. That was the worst voice acting I have ever heard in almost anything.
Well, I appreciate your restraint.
Of course, I didn't find any it quite as jarring because, yeah, the Rangers did choose their replacements, no big deal. It's, and, of course, the not needing to go get some magical trinket to transfer the powers, is there anything that stated they did need a magical trinket?
Probably when they were creating the Turbo Powers.
The original power transfer episode.
They sure didn't need one when Catherine came on board. Kimberly just handed her the power coin. Boom.
Okay, let's break off here for a second. For the original power transfer, you know, it's the original power coins that have all their little quirks and whatever about them. And, okay, I can see maybe they would need to have some special device to facilitate the transfer of power. In the third season, when they changed from Kimberly to Kat, it was a new set of power coins made by Ninjor, and it does not necessarily need the same tricks to switch power from one person to another.
I would imagine since they made their powers specifically for their use in Turbo, as established in the movie, they would make it where, if necessary, that can be switched between people without having to go through a big production the same way. Now, continue.
You're really mumbly there.
Well, I'm sure it'll come through fine on my recording.
Okay. But yeah, and also when transferring the power, they also didn't need any special doohickey to give the Gold Ranger powers to Jason or for him to give them back to Trey.
Well, no, they did have to go through a big deal
the
process.
The power staff. Yeah.
But that was partly to put Trey back together since he had fallen all the pieces in the meantime.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. All as I'm saying, you know, the individual transfers, like, say, from Kimberly to Kat or whatever, aside, all as I'm saying is comparing this two-parter with the two-parter of the power transfer from the original series, because it's, you know, 3 to 4 characters that's changing, this just, to me, felt like a completely low-budget copycat.
Well, I think part of that, too, is that there was not any indication until the second part of this story that there was going to be any power transfer. It's like it's something they add in at the last minute.
Right.
To play devil's advocate, though, it is slightly better than the first power transfer in one regard, and that's that we actually got to see the original Rangers in person, and they got a real chance to say goodbye instead of just being written out with lazy footage splicing.
Well, true.
But you have to admire what they managed to accomplish in Season 2 with what they had to work with changing the characters like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to give them some credit there, but I agree with you. It's good that this was handled in such a way that the original actors were still on set.
Yeah.
Somebody want to chime in?
And of course,
the other big difference is that the new Rangers hadn't already known the secret identities of the Power Rangers until they were brought in.
Right.
I gotta say, I really didn't like most of the new cast.
No?
Not really.
Well, at this point, though, there was barely any exposure for any of them.
Right.
You know, we'd had Carlos and Ashley show up one or two times before in earlier
episodes. And TJ as well.
What?
Well, TJ shown up as well before the two-parter.
No, I don't think. Where did he show up before that? He was coming in on the bus from out of town.
Yeah, I think that was his first appearance.
Him and Cassie, yeah.
That was Cassie. Wasn't TJ one of Carlos's friends who was bullying Justin in one episode?
Fort Max, didn't you even watch this episode?
I did, and also the episodes prior.
Okay, well, TJ was on the bus with Cassie coming in from out of town. It's not entirely out of the possibility that the same actor did not appear in an earlier episode, but he wouldn't have been the same character at that rate.
I know what he's talking about. Formax, are you talking about the black character that was in there earlier tormenting Justin?
I think so.
That was a different actor. That was someone completely different. That was not TJ.
Okay.
That was, yeah, well, I remember that. I vaguely remember that now, but yeah, it wasn't TJ.
Okay, well, good job there, Fort Max. Instead of Chris Triplett, we're going to start making the jokes about you being the racist.
Well, hey, Tripp's already verified that.
Okay. After Turbo, a Power Rangers movie came out, I had seen various episodes of this series of Power Rangers Turbo, but at this point, I was done with Power Rangers watching for a while.
Yeah.
I don't think I came back into it until maybe Lightspeed or Time Force.
You know, I have to say that I never really cared for the first half of Power Rangers Turbo. I thought the series improved markedly with the new cast.
I think one of my favorite TJ episodes is the baseball one.
I think my favorite episode is the one where they got baked in the oven. But we'll talk more about the second half episode in next week's Superhero Time. I don't want to get us ahead of ourselves here. But one of the interesting things about passing the torch was that finally the Putrepods, which were introduced in Turbo Power Rangers movie, showed up in the series, and then never showed up again after this.
What was the reason for that? Did they just not have the suits or the money or what?
Well, obviously they had the suits since they did have the Putrepods show up once. It was probably just more trouble than it was worth to use them when they have a bunch of Piranatron suits running around.
Yeah.
Right.
I can't imagine a Putrepod suit is easy to wear either.
Or easy to maintain.
Yeah, that too. True.
Bring back the Tengu Warriors. The Piranatrons, all as they are is brown-colored putties without the Z-vest.
Well, I was thinking all they really are is
the Piranatrons have actual armor. They're not just spandex.
Or feathers.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, as power transfer episodes go, passing the torch was kind of weird in how the story was structured. Yeah. You know, there's the clues in the first part that this would be happening, but it's not really explicitly mentioned until the second half of the story. You know, it's like there was two different teams working on this story, and they weren't conferring about what they were doing ahead of time.
Of course, another thing is that it's also going to make the kids want to know what are they preparing for.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure I even looked at it that way the first time I watched the episode. It's just like, oh, hey, what are they there for? You know.
Yeah.
I mean, you can clearly tell in this two-parter, you can clearly tell with the... I don't know if this is the first episode for Carlos and all them, but like Carlos and Ashley and those two, and then Cassie and TJ, you can tell they're bringing in new cast members. I mean, it's very obvious, but I don't know how much as far as the writing of it went so far as to plot it out a little bit better than what they did.
Carlos and Ashley showed up in a prior episode, but of course you had no reason to pay attention to them at that point.
Right.
I mean, I certainly remember watching this for the first time. It had not occurred to me then that those two had been in episodes previously. It's just, you know, people the Rangers randomly knew the names of.
Yeah.
But then when the reruns got back around to their introduction episode, I was like, oh, hey, that's where they came from. I mean, it just kind of happens that way sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so is there anything else we want to mention about passing the torch?
Not really.
Don't think there's anything else worth mentioning.
No.
Not even Divatox's mother?
I repeat, I don't think there's anything else worth mentioning.
If with all the snakes in her mother hair? Showed up after in any form whatsoever, yeah, it'd be worth mentioning.
Was the actress that played her, was that Endora from Bewitched? Because that's what it reminded me of.
Well, she was probably dead by then. Endora wasn't exactly young during Bewitched.
True, but it was that type of thing that it reminded me of, though.
What?
I said it was that. That's what that whole scene with her mother and her dreaming. It kind of reminded me of when Endora would pop in and out of Bewitched.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. It's weird though that they did introduce Divatox's mother for these two episodes and then never mentioned or referenced her in any way afterward. You know, it's like. Wasn't there any other way they could motivate the plot without doing that?
Apparently not.
Probably not.
I can't imagine.
Well, of course. Well, they did need someone else to get Divatox to do it, considering there was no detonator involved.
Okay, but my thinking here is that Barbara Goodson and whoever actually played Rita on screen could not have been so busy that she couldn't have come back for a one-off appearance. I mean, just as one example of a way to do this without creating the Divatox's mother character.
I don't know.
Well, that would have worked, considering Zed's plans are often get Tommy out of the way.
That was basically his whole motivation in the first part of season 2, wasn't it?
Yep.
More or less, yeah.
But yeah, okay, I guess you're right. There's not really anything else worth mentioning about passing the torch.
Yeah.
Except that it sets us up for next week's episode of Superhero Time, wherein we will be talking about the second half of Power Rangers Turbo, which, really, from here, where can it go but up?
Further down.
I think it went up on the season finale of Turbo when they started going from Turbo to space.
That's okay, but we'll talk about that next week. Don't want to give away too much now, or we won't have anything to talk about next time. Okay, I'd like to thank Mike from the Geekcast Radio Network for being here with us this week.
You're welcome.
Mike, you are completely welcome to come back and talk more Turbo with us next week if you want.
I don't think I have any voice actors interviews next week, so I should actually be able to be on longer.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, we certainly got this knocked out in the time we had available, so
yeah.
No problem yeah. there. Do you want to throw a quick plug?
Yeah, go over to geekcastradio.com. You can see all of our podcasts. We're an entire podcast network. We currently run, I believe, up to 8 shows at once. I think there's 4 that run pretty much every month. There's one that runs biweekly, which is the Beast Unleashed podcast. There are 2 that run weekly, which is Tooncast and M-Wire. Just go to geekcastradio.com. Explore the website. There's a bunch of podcast stuff, interviews we've done with David Kay, Gary Chalk, Tara Strong, Larry Kenny, a whole bunch of good stuff.
Okay, cool. You're like a machine there, Mike.
I know.
You're a podcasting machine.
Annoyed machine.
Okay.
For some strange reason, I want to listen to Mr. Roboto right about now.
Huh.
Oh, boy. You guys weren't born in the 80s, were you?
No, I know what you're talking about. That's just kind of a weird urge to have at this moment.
He yeah. said machine, so...
And that's the first thing you think of?
I don't know.
The first thing you think of is the Stick song?
My brain is very, very strange.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to the show this week. Be sure to come back and catch us next time when we'll be doing the second half of Power Rangers Turbo. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio. And if you're listening to the podcast somewhere else through iTunes or by way of the RSS feeds, check us out at tfradio.net. We got lots of good stuff there, a few other podcasts that are probably worth listening to. We will see you next week.
This has been Superhero Time with your hosts, XV, Hey Mickey, Paladin, and Fort Max. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Superhero Time is a Radio Free Cybertron production. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.